It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill, extraordinaire, and Kirk Elliott sitting in with us. It's Monday. As you know, we like to shoot the bull on Monday, and that's what we'll be doing today. We'll be talking about everything that happened this weekend in motorsports, all the way down the list. Austin, how are you doing today, bud? You doing all right?
Yeah, late night, early morning.
What time did you get home last night from the races?
About 12:30.
12:30. 12:30 is not that late for a young man like you. How many hours of sleep do you need a night, Austin?
I don't know, probably 7 or 8. I usually go to bed. I actually take that back. It's probably like, I usually go to bed about 1, up about 8, so 7 hours.
Yeah. You know, I'm about an 8-hour guy. Kirk, how many hours a night do you feel that you need to sleep when you're to make yourself fully rested?
6.
6 hours.
6 hours can do it for me. Yep.
Well, I'm more of an 8-hour guy, and I'll do whatever I can to sleep 8 hours if I can. I'll just do whatever I can. Have to.
I can't remember the last time I slept 8 hours. Long time ago.
Well, you know, that's why, Kirk, you know what? If you don't get good rest, they're going to start putting dirt on top of you before you know it.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
You need to get as much rest as possible. There's no way that we want anything to happen to you, so start getting some 8 hours worth of rest. Can you do that for me?
I'll try.
Will you give it a whirl?
But, you know, I can't. It's been like never that I. Well, I take that back.
Never. Never is.
When I was a young kid.
You don't like using the word never. Yeah.
When I was a young kid, I slept 8 hours, but the older I get, the less I sleep.
Well, Kirk, you need to start resting more.
But I feel good after 6 hours.
Yeah. So you and Austin both went down to the Missouri State Fair last night to watch the PowerEye 410 race last night. What'd you guys think? First of all, let's start off with Austin. Austin, what'd you think about the conditions last night? You're a race car driver. What'd you think about it?
You know, let me get my microphone unstuck here. You know, I think it was a good night. I was just a little disappointed in the car count.
Yeah.
I think we ended up with, 14, 15 cars, and I was sitting at 12 and 13 for a long time, and we had two cars, you know, kind of rolling late. And,
right.
You know, I was just a little surprised, you know, with it paying $5,000, but, you know, you start breaking down.
$500 to start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you start looking at, you know, the races kind of going on here, and you have, you know, a big paying race at Jackson the night, you know, prior. So you pull a lot of your, you know, kind of northern cars to go up there.
Right.
Maybe some of your Knoxville cars. And you had some MOA races going on over in Illinois. And it's just.
It kind of watered it down.
It was just going to be tough for guys to make the haul back down. Like, I figured you see, like, maybe a Ryan Timms come over from Macon and run his 410, and he wasn't there. You know, like, I thought maybe you would see more Knoxville cars, and you only saw Brown there, and, you know, he had to drive all night from Jackson.
You would count Jennington as a Knoxville car, would you?
Yeah, but he set his weekend to only be at Sedalia. They didn't go anywhere else, but, you know, I figured you'd see some more, you know, kind of semi-regional cars show, maybe some more 360s at the lake, from the lake. But, yeah, it's just kind of a tough time to run that race, but, you know, August is a hard month to do any sprint car racing anyways.
Is it me, or are we starting to see a transition from some of the guys that have been typically ASCS 360 racers starting to make the transition over to the 410s? We're starting to see it with Gunnar Ramey. Does Ben Brown have a 410? Slater Health, does he have a 410? I'm sure they do, right?
Yeah. Kyle Bellum was there last night.
Did the guy that you were helping last night, Riley Kreisel, does he have a 410?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a 410 race. They all have 410s there. But
well, hold on. You think every one of them was a 410?
Not every single car was.
Right.
There was a handful. There's a couple 305s and like a 360 or so. But the cars that race, competitively, they have, a 410 and a 360. But the only reason why guys are leaving the 360 is they don't pay enough. And we've said this a countless number of times now. They just don't pay good. You look at last night. You won the race. You get
$5,000.
Yeah. Second's $2,500. Third was $1,200. Grand, I think it was a grand for like fourth, maybe fifth. But I mean, look at that. A regional race pays $2,000 to win or $1,500 to win for a 360, and it doesn't make sense.
What's it pay to start on a regional ASCS race?
Like $300.
$300.
Do you think maybe Blake Hahn might bring his 410 up and run this race?
No, I don't. I wouldn't think that he would do that. To be honest with you, Blake's down to 1410 right now, and he hurt one of his motors up there at Knoxville, and so I'm sure he's probably trying to save that motor for if he wants to run with the All-Stars or World of Outlaws or somebody like that. Track conditions last night, Austin. Give me a breakdown of the track conditions that we saw last night.
And I like when Sedalia kind of gets slick and wide. And I was pleased with what we had last night. I think it could have been a little bit better. It was a little wider than half the track. It was probably a lane or two above the middle.
So it was a little widened out.
Yeah, it was slick top to bottom. It wasn't like a hard curve. It was a cushion that was kind of fluffy. You can kind of get in it and get stuck later in the race.
Right.
But guys could, run the left rear on the left side of on the edge of it, and stick the right rear in the fluff, and run through there like in the heat races and qualifying. And with the track being that way, it just made it really tough in the feature to, make any runs and passes on guys. It was going to be tight on sliders if anybody had a big run. And we saw that with, kind of Brown and Crockett, on the restarts. And really the restarts were the only time you had a shot at passing anybody. And, later in the race, I'm going to say with probably about 5 or 6 laps to go, it's tough to know. It was only a 20-lap feature, and they don't have a scoreboard or anybody.
So you
or
can
any
keep
way
track
to,
of laps.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was just kind of tough to see. I mean, last week left to go, but I think it was about 5 or so. And they had a strip of rubber, or patchy rubber kind of being laid down. It was about a car width off the cushion. So you could run like the left side, like the right rear, probably 2 foot off the cushion, and run the left sides through the rubber and kind of run through rubber through the corner. And it was patchy off the exit. So it made coming off a 4 really tricky because you'd be tight in the rubber. And then you hit a patch of slick, and then be free.
Blow the
back,
tires off.
Yeah, then be back in rubber, and now you're tight again. And then the front stretch had the same holes in it that it did last year. So it really upset the cars in the front stretch, and then the back stretch had the kind of the rough spot where the crossover gate is. But besides that, it was if we're not racing on it, but once twice a year, I thought it was a pretty good track. It could have went rubber top to bottom, and it didn't, and it. And it lasted, 15 of the 20 laps before anything really came in. And it wasn't like, it was, a walk-down race the last 5 laps. Guys were still kind of able to make runs and get to people. It was just a little too slick and narrow for, any, big sliders or big runs to get by any people.
So Roger Crockett was, it looked like the guy to beat early in the race. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, they called the original restart back where it looked like Brown was going to get the
lead,
advantage.
Did they not penalize Brown on that?
They did not. I don't know. I'm not for sure that it was Brown that they accused of jumping the start.
Well, so don't
but
say
they called the start back and redid it, and the second time Crockett got the jump on Brown, and they let that one go, and then Crockett checked out until the first yellow flag
came out.
So, Kirk,
let's not say that it was Brown's fault.
I don't know if it was Brown or not.
You said it was when you first stated it.
No, what I'm saying is Brown got the advantage on the original start, and it looked like he was going to take the lead from the start, but they called it back. And on the next restart, it was Crockett who got the jump on Brown.
Austin.
And once he got out in front, he checked out to a pretty sizable lead till the first yellow flag, till they got into lap traffic, and that Kaiser got upside down in turns 3 and 4, and then that changed the complexion of the race.
Austin, so Kirk, he stays on the fence quite a bit here. Did Brown jump the start on the first start? Did you think he did or not?
I have a video of the start of the race, and
you do.
You know, it was just I was standing next to like the little the platform deal,
right
behind the flag stand.
Yep.
And
the stage.
Yeah, the stage is that's what it's called.
Right.
You know, they were Brown had probably a car length and a half on Crockett. You know, coming off of 4, like right after they fired. And you know, I think it was, you know, reason why they probably didn't penalize Brown was it was more of a front row issue of not being side by side when they fired off.
Yep.
And, you know, I think, you know, Brown took off when he wanted to, but, you know, who knows what, you know, Crockett was doing. If you're going to
playing games, usually, you don't know if there was games.
Yeah, usually
being
if you're starting front row, you're going to do something to get him jacked up and or get him sent back a row. But, there was, you know, it wasn't a huge advantage, I felt like, for Brown, but it's just, yeah, probably more than both cars.
So you don't think he needed to be penalized on that start?
It wasn't like super
overwhelming
obvious that he was.
I thought they probably should have let the first start go, in my opinion, but they called it back, and the second was not that much different than the first, except Roger Crockett got the jump on him, and with nine laps into the race, I don't know about you, Austin, but I thought Crockett was on his way to victory.
Yeah, I was sitting there with my buddy Ace, and you know, he got the lead down the backstretch on the first lap, and it was just gone. You know, he had a really good pace set, and he caught traffic, and he was rolling through traffic pretty well. And
Ace Botenhammer?
Yes, mm-hmm. And I just didn't think that, you know, with anything big happening, if that Brown was going to be able to get to him, and you know, until that red came out, I don't think, you know, Brown had a shot. Just
you think Roger had it covered until
then. Just the way the race was going at that point, it was nobody was making really any big runs, and Brown's car was still about the same as it was the first couple laps, or it didn't have a ton of speed in it. It had speed, but it wasn't like running them down like it was, you know, kind of later in the race.
Right.
Shane Kaiser was the guy who got up into the loose stuff and flipped his car down in turns 3 and 4 after having a fire in hot laps earlier in the night, so he had a fire. His car caught fire during hot laps.
Whose car did?
Shane Kaiser.
Oh.
And right. So, but that changed the whole complexion of the race at that point.
Well, I'm going to go with what Nina says. Nina Jenniton, she's chimed in here. She said good track last night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
It's good.
Ayrton Jenniton set quick time last night, but he had a tire go down during his heat race. But he still came back, managed a third-place finish in the race last night.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not being able to start up on the front row like Brown and Crockett, Ayrton Jenniton was at a severe disadvantage racing with those two guys.
Let me ask you, was there much lap traffic, or did they get to lap traffic at all?
They got to lap traffic before the red came out on lap 9, so they had two cars from Farmington that were well off the pace that they got by, that were well out of the racing line, that they got by with no problem. And then they got to, I can't remember who they were, I think it was probably a group of like 3 or so cars that were racing, you know, kind of top to bottom, that made Crockett kind of check up once when he was, you know, trying to get through them, and did the same for Brown. And I believe Brown and Crockett were the only two cars to get to lap traffic on the first stint of the race before the red came out.
It would have been interesting, don't you think, Austin, if that race would have gone through without any yellows lap traffic, how well Crockett would have been able to manage that versus Brian Brown at that point. It definitely would have slowed him up some, but would that have been enough through lap traffic for Brown to still get around him?
It would have been really interesting. Yeah. I think traffic would have played a factor into it. I think fuel load and fuel level would have played a factor into it. You know, I know, like, on Riley's car, you know, it's a 28-gallon tank, and we burned 10 gallons in an 8-lap heat race, and for a 20-lap feature, we were kind of nervous on if we were going to make it for, you know, the feature. And, you know, some of the big 14 guys, I know Brown runs a 33-gallon tank, but I think he might be one of the only ones there that had that. So I think brown would have been all right on fuel, but you look at tire wear too. It was the track was really abrasive on the H15 tires, which is softer than our mediums for the 360s, and they had an open tire rule, so we could have ran a medium if we wanted to. And I think, you know, it would have been really interesting to see how long the H's for most of the top five, which they had H's on, see how long they would have lasted. I know we ran 9 laps, had a bleeder stick on Riley's car, and had to come and change it. And it was, that tire had probably 20 laps on it previous to the 9 laps on the feature, and it was looking pretty rough. It was about half of life left in it, and
was it chunking out?
It didn't chunk. It was just really feathered hard and just worn, you know, about halfway down.
Right.
Big crowd down there last night. Huge crowd.
I was trying to figure out, you know, you look at the grandstands down there, it's, you know, huge. I don't know how many people it holds, but I feel like it was, you know, a little over half
full.
Probably
7,000-8,000 people that thing holds.
Yeah, I feel like it was, you know, pretty over, you know, about half full, a little over half, and I thought it was a good crowd for, you know, Sunday night, last night of the fair.
For 15 cars?
15 cars, and I was actually surprised to see how well the two support classes had cars. I think there was a full field in both classes, besides the sprint cars.
We'll mention that a little bit there, that the support classes, they had 18 B mods down there last night, and they had 26 full-bodied stock cars down there. Damon Clevenger wins that. Tom Charles, you said, started dead last, didn't he, Kurt?
Started 25th and sliced his way up through the field. It was kind of fun watching him charge his way.
Well, he's
a
professional race car driver. That's why.
Your old buddy Brad Barlow had a car down there.
Oh, Brad Barlow. Yeah. He's been running there for a long time. But let me tell you, the guy to beat right now in that series with the old timer cars is Damon Clevenger.
Yeah. We saw him race at I-70 Speedway.
He beat Tom Charles at I-70 Speedway in the vintage cars out there.
Back in the old days,
a few weeks ago,
he dominated that four-cylinder class out on the pavement out at I-70, did he not?
Well,
won a lot of races.
Kirk, you don't remember, but he also drove a super truck.
He did. Now that you mention that, I do remember that.
Yeah, he also drove a super truck. But anyway, long story short, right now the guy to beat in that class is definitely Damon Clevenger. Tom Charles, maybe if he started towards the front, he might be the guy to beat. But I think Tom's trying to play fair. He's just pulling up the rear and seeing if he can run through the field and get up there and try to win the race before the end of the race. And you know what? That's good. It's good that he's doing that, because Tom Charles by far is the class of the field when it comes to drivers with those cars.
Once he got up to second, I agree. I don't think he had anything for Damon Clevenger.
Yeah.
And even if he'd have started up next to him, I'm not sure that he would have outrun Damon Clevenger, but he was still faster than everybody else in that field. And a good modified, a B-mod race. Terry Schultz passed Gunnar Martin with just a handful of laps to go to win the B-mod class.
Yeah, Gunnar's always been a pretty good B-mod driver. But, you know, Terry Schultz, he's been around a long time, man. That guy knows how to get it done.
Used to be an A-mod driver.
Yeah.
And a good one.
Yeah, for sure. So, anyway, long story short, how would you grade out last night's action down there at the fair?
I would give it a C+, B-. I wish there were more cars.
I bet you Austin gives it a better grade than that. What would you say, Austin? You're going to give it a better than a C+, aren't you?
That's a tough one. That's...
I would like to see more cars.
I love the fair. I love Sedalia. I hope the track stays
on
the fairgrounds. I heard some rumors last night from a handful of people of what the fair board wants to do with the place.
What are they wanting to do? What are you hearing?
I heard this from a handful of fans and a driver or two.
I heard it too.
Said they want to make the dirt track, or get rid of the dirt track and make it a big, like, rodeo, like,
arena.
And then, you know, you heard some rumors that, you know, they have some investors and lined up to have a really big paying sprint car race next year on the half mile. Yeah. So you have investors wanting to pay for a big sprint car race on the half mile. Then you have the fair board possibly wanting to put in a rodeo arena.
Listen,
in it. So
does it justify keeping that racetrack open to run it once a year?
Well, I think the Fair Board would like to see it in use more often, but it's really tough for a promoter to make a go of it down there when
they don't have the concessions. Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a tough situation. You know, they took the half-mile track out of the Iowa State Fairgrounds here a few years ago. There's no track left there, so... You know, it's always in question what the future of that track is.
This is a trend that we see across America, yeah. These fairground tracks. The racetracks are starting to disappear, Adam.
Yeah. I think Springfield Mile will be around for a long time, and DuQuoin and places like that. But, you got to wonder what the future is. I do have a little bit of sound here from Brian, if you wanted
to get that
out of the way. Yeah. Spoke with Brian Brown after his win last night, following an all-night drive back from Jackson, Minnesota to race. At this event, he talked about how he's able to get around. Roger Crockett for the lead.
Yeah, they didn't really like my first start there. They thought maybe I got going a little bit too earlier. He was lagging back. So when that happens, puts me as a pollster in a little bit of a disadvantage because, like, obviously I knew how important clean air was going to be. I didn't want to get called for a jump and then put it back a row. So let him get a good opportunity there to get out and get going. And then once he got going, he was setting a blistering pace. And I was hoping we got to that big lump of traffic. And I said, okay, here's my chance. And then the red come out. And on that red, like Danny said, my tires did not look good at all. But I rolled up behind him on that restart and seen his didn't look that good either. So the restart prior to getting the lead, he got off there really good. I guess I got tight, so I moved my wing around and was able to get a good run there on the second one and get the lead and then just try to cruise. Yeah, I mean, it's really, there's the guy behind you, David Goodson, and Ronnie Ditzfield, who this race is after, my two first sponsors. And to win a race in his honor means more than you guys. Maybe a Missouri State Fair Championship, but it means a lot to me. You know, I have his name on both sides of my car here. And like I said, David Goodson with Impact Signs, Ditzfield Transfer. Without those two people, there probably wouldn't be no Brian Brown Racing. And I'm just as proud to have them on the car as I am Casey's and FEP. So to win the race with the family here means a lot, man. It really does.
Well, I'm glad Brian Brown and the 21 showed up last night. It gave the event the heft that it needed.
There's not many people that know their way around Sedalia State Fair better than Brian Brown. Let's face it. Brian Brown knows his way around that place just as good as any. Would you agree with me on that one, Austin? That Brian Brown is probably about as good as anybody down there?
Yeah, I could agree with that. I think he has, you know, out of the drivers that were racing last night, the most experience out of pretty much anyone down there that was racing.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about what's been going on in the racing world this weekend. It's all right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery, We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, and make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
Three 9-hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. Kirk Elliott sits in with us on Mondays and Fridays. We always appreciate you sitting in with us, Kirk. A little news coming down the pipe today. The Lucas Oil ASCS race, the national tour race that was supposed to be this weekend at Dodge City, has been canceled. We don't know the reason for the cancellation, but it is not going to be rescheduled. So no ASCS national tour race this weekend at Dodge City.
And no reason given why that is.
No reason given.
Hmm.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's exactly what the reason is, but... You know, Dodge City is such a nice racetrack, man. You really hate to lose that on the date, on the schedule. Have you ever been to Dodge City, Austin?
No, I want to go. I feel like it's like the Lucas Oil of in Kansas, just the way how nice the facility is and the concrete pit, the paved pits.
It's nice, yeah.
You know, just
it's
the,
not Lucas Oil Speedway nice, but it's nice.
It's the Lucas Oil Speedway of Kansas. A track's in Kansas.
Well, I guess if you want to call it that, right.
Name a track in Kansas that's nicer than Dodge City.
Let me think about that one for a second. Nicer in Dodge City. Can anybody else come up with a racetrack that's nicer than Dodge City in Kansas? I can't think of one.
That's a city-owned track, is it not? Dodge City?
I'll say this. And you're probably going to totally disagree with me, both of you. But Lakeside Speedway is not that bad of a racetrack. It's got paved pits.
It's nice.
Not Dodge City, but I'm just saying it's similar.
Yes, it's a couple grades under it, but yes, it's like it. It needs a lot. If it wants to rival it, it needs a lot of work to do that.
Well, you know, here's the problem right now with promoters. And just so you know, promoters right now are having a hard time just barely keeping afloat, right? I mean, how many, just like this last weekend at Aztec Speedway that was down there in New Mexico. They're closing up after this weekend. This was their last race. And we're not sure if it's going to open up again next year. The family members want the man that's running the racetrack to close it down because it's just too much work. But that's what he loves to do, and so he might just stay on board. We don't know. But, you know, you hate it when you hear racetracks are closing down. It's just
well,
it's
just
terrible.
look at, you know, there's a couple of tracks kind of in the south that we had that issue with last week. But look at the region and the area those tracks are closing at. There was one in North Carolina, but North Carolina isn't known for dirt track racing. It's more pavement racing,
yeah,
and it's just,
right.
You know, it would be different if we saw tracks around the Midwest do that because there's a good core group of dirt racers in the Midwest
right.
That, you know, and there's plenty of places to go to. And, you know, you go to places like, you know, New Mexico or Arizona where there's cars, but there's not enough cars to keep it going, and there's just
right.
It doesn't make sense to have a racetrack there, and it's like having a dirt track in North Carolina. It's all pavement racing. It's not, yes, there is some dirt racing, but
it's not as much.
You know, you're out in the middle of the sticks. It's like
right.
Racing in Tennessee. Some places you can make it work, but you're in the middle of the sticks, and there's not much going on.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So let's talk a little bit about Carson Macedo. He picks up the Jackson Nationals win. What'd you guys think about that? Did you watch it, Kurt?
I did watch that race, and, you know, that was he looked like a man on a mission in that
he
race.
He did, man.
They ran this King of the Hill to set up the first four rows of the feature, and he finished last in that thing.
Right.
He started on the outside of the fourth row,
right.
And he was working the high side and the bottom side of that racetrack, but once he got up into second place and had his sights on Jacob Allen, I don't think he was to be denied, and maybe he was thinking of, you know, he had that race stolen from him in the last lap in the afternoon by Logan Schuart. He was pretty ticked off about that, I'm sure, and he carried that anger into the evening session and really put on a show there. That was a great performance by Carson.
Jacob Allen was fast qualifier with a 12.99 with a 4. And Brad Sweet was second with a 13.25 with a 6. There's quite a bit of difference there in the qualifying times. Wouldn't you agree with that, Austin? I mean, think about that. It's about 3/10.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, you know, when Brad went out, you know, to qualify. And
when he went out, yeah.
Yeah, but, Jacob was one of the earlier cars out. And it just, you know, we've seen that here in the past couple of weeks that, you know, you got to be out early in the 4/10 qualifying to get a good lap. And we kind of saw that in the afternoon portion. And they would be more important in the afternoon races with, you know, the way it's day racing is. You want to be the first one out because it's going to be falling off. But I was really mm-hmm. surprised going back to the afternoon race that Macedo was able to knock down a new track record even after I didn't really realize it. And I'm glad, you know, Johnny and Austin Lloyd mentioned this, that they kind of reconfigured the track a little bit. They brought the berm out about 6 feet or so and kind of narrowed up the racing surface a little bit.
That berm at the bottom at Jackson is a monster.
Yeah, well, you look at videos from last year, and it was kind of closer to the guardrail, and now
right.
It's, you know, a lane, a push-off lane. So, you know, well, it didn't affect the track that much, but, you know, daytime racing, a little narrower track, and probably not the best, you know, air conditions to go for a new track record. And Macedo denied all that and, you know, is not our new track record holder.
I thought the track was in pretty good condition myself. I thought they could get all over the place with that thing. And I think Carson Macedo said as much at the end of that race, that he was able to move his car around top, bottom, in the middle, just about anywhere he wanted to.
Yeah, he was, like you said in his interview, he was really frustrated with how his car was after the King of the Hill dashes. And, you know, Philip Dietz is one of the greatest minds in sprint car racing. And for him to go out there and just start, you know, throwing changes at it and to just always, you know, hit it. You know, he might be super far off in the dash and and go out there and throw a bunch of changes at it, and he's, you know, battling for a win at the end of the night. It just shows how good, you know, Phil Dietz is, and why he's one of the best, you know, sprint car crew chiefs we have, you know, going on the tour right now. And, you know, with him starting eighth, it was going to be tough to really get by anybody with. The track was racy, don't get me wrong, but,
right,
you know, it still had a lot of, they had some good moisture in it. So it would be really tough to, I thought, you know, at the start of the race to make any big runs. And I mean, I was wrong about that. But, yeah, it was a, you know, pretty good race.
We're going to attempt to get Carson Macedo on this week, just so you know. So,
well, you know, we talk about Phil Dietz, and he is a great crew chief, no doubt about it.
One of the best.
In this race, boy, you really got to give it to the driver. In this one, Carson Macedo put on a show.
See, I'm not like you, Kirk. I think you got to give credit to the team because, as he mentioned, the car was junk and it wasn't doing very good, and he left it up to Phil Dietz to go in there and get that car right. The car, he was so frustrated with that car, right, up until the feature, and he just went in. He told Philip Dietz what was going on with that car. Philip Dietz went in there and tweaked on that car and made that car right. I give the credit to the team, not the driver.
Okay.
More than anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would
you agree with me on that, Austin? That Philip Dietz went in there. Because as you heard, Carson Macedo said that he was very frustrated with that race car. And he told Philip Dietz what it was doing and where he needed help. Philip Dietz went in there and got that car right before the feature.
Does Philip Dietz, Clyde Knipp, Nate Repitz drive the race car?
No, but listen, if the car doesn't work, you're not going to win.
You could have the best car out there and your drivers suck and not go anywhere. It's a group. It's a team effort.
Does Carson Macedo suck?
Did I say Carson
suck?
No, I said you could have the best car for anybody and have the worst driver and go nowhere. So,
but Carson Macedo's not the worst driver out there.
It's a team effort is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm with you on
Carson
that.
Carson needed to do his job, and Carson knows what his job is. Phil and the team knows what their job is. They do it both right, they're going to win.
Let me ask you a question.
They did that Saturday night.
Let me ask you a question. If the car was the same as it was before that A main, does Carson Macedo win that race? Yes or no?
No.
Probably not.
Because you're missing one link in the operation. You have to have 200% operations or, you know, efforts to make that car go around the track. Carson gave his 100%. The car's at 50. It's not going to work, right?
Yeah, right. I agree. The point I was trying to make was, and Phil Dietz got the car right, no doubt about it. But then it was up to the driver to deliver the goods, and where he started in eighth.
But if you
the driver delivered the goods in this race.
Okay. But if you got a car that isn't good and your crew chiefs makes it better so you can win the race, you got to give a little bit of the credit to Philip Dietz on
making that car right. I'm not going to argue with you on that point.
Right.
What you say is true.
Right.
I'm just saying in this case, the driver really excelled.
Carson Macedo was very frustrated with that car before that A main.
Yeah.
Vocally, he spoke out about how bad the car was.
I heard the interview.
Right.
And everything you say is right, and I'm not arguing with you.
Right.
I'm giving extra credit to the driver. That's all I'm doing.
Carson Macedo had to drive the car to victory lane.
Yes, sir.
Right? But if Philip Dietz doesn't make the changes on that car before the feature, he doesn't win that
race. I'm with you on that. Yeah. Nobody's arguing with you on that point.
Yeah.
All good, man.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, the 41 car was the master on Saturday night at Jackson, and they're $25,000 richer for it. And what's he got now? 8 wins in the World of Outlaws? That leads everybody, does it not?
Yes, he is the winningest driver on the tour.
Right. Is it 8?
It's 8 or 9.
So
I think it was 9.
9. They've got it going on right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's and next weekend they're going to be up in North Dakota before heading out to Skagit Speedway out in the Pacific Northwest over Labor Day weekend.
Carson Macedo has 9 wins.
9.
Sheldon Honshield has 8 wins. David Greville has 5. Brad Sweet has 3.
And Sheldon Honshield, another charge up through the field. He starts 21st and ends up in the top 10. Brad Sweet can't be very happy with where he ended up after starting 3rd in this race, and he faded back to 8th at the end of this race. So I'm sure the 49 Casey Kane team is not very happy at all, especially that crash that Casey Kane was involved in that heat race with Brooke Tatnall. That was a wicked crash in the heat
race.
Hold
on. Let me ask you guys something. When Casey Kane landed, did it look like he was a little out of sorts sitting in his car? Did you see that wreck, Austin?
I did. I wouldn't be surprised if
he
was.
Didn't it look like he was just kind of just sitting there kind of still in the car for a second, like he didn't want to move? Didn't it look like it to me? It looked like it rung his bell a little bit.
I mean, it was a hard hit.
That was a hard,
you know, it goes
hard
from,
run. Yeah.
It was just the way he hit Brooke and the way it landed. It was just a hard hit overall. The poor guy is just wanting to race sprint cars and enjoy his retirement from NASCAR.
And that's the second one, big one he's had this third.
Third. He had a hard wreck at Fallujah, which I think was probably the hardest one I've seen in a while.
Right.
Back of the frame, tail tank area hit the wall and it hurt him pretty good. Now he's out with a concussion for a while, and then had the hard wreck at the Kings Royal on that day prelim show. And then he has his hard wreck at Jackson. So poor Casey Kane. And we know what his past like is with concussions, and hopefully it's nothing major, and he can come back and race in North Dakota this weekend.
Yeah. He was just a victim of circumstances there. There was no time to react when Brooke Tatnall got sideways in that. I mean, he just had no time to react.
Nowhere to go. Just clipped him. And it was funny how he clipped him, and then he got the altitude that he got in that wreck. He was way up. He was nearly as high as the fence, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was
pretty
close. Yeah, he was. I mean, he was up there some ways. It was just we had 2 hard wrecks in the heat races with, not really 2 hard wrecks. That was probably the hardest one. And then you have Sheldon and Henderson kind of get caught up in a wreck into 3. And it actually, speaking of Sheldon, where he came from, what was it, 21st, Kirk?
Yeah, coming out, he won the B main and started.
Well,
he won
the B
10.
With the hurt car. I saw a video where they were welding on like the panhard bar up in the front end, knocked the front end panhard or the panhard bar that holds the front end, you know, side to side out of it, and they were having to go through and weld it back up. So it was a good recovery by Sheldon, you know, coming through with a hurt race car to, you know, have a good hard charging, you know, run up through the field.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Anybody a little disappointed in Macri? He started 14th, ran 9th. Did you think he'd run a little bit better than that?
I don't know.
Was that his first time at the racetrack?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime you finish the top 10 in a World of Outlaws race,
I don't know if that was
a good night.
I don't know if that was his first time there.
Yeah, I believe it was his first time to Jackson.
First time at Jackson. Mm-hmm. I think so. And he's going to be in the 11M car next weekend in the All-Stars, right?
Yeah. Can't wait for that next week. That is getting ready to get really big. I can't wait to go over the schedule. We'll talk about it here in just a little bit. But first, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about the All-Stars. Justin Peck picking up his 5th win of the 2022 season. Picked up $10,000 at Utica Rome Speedway. We'll talk about that and more when we come back right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder,
faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, and make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must-play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
Three nine-hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. Just got confirmation that Brian Brown's going to join us on the show tomorrow. So we'll be talking about that and more. With Brian Brown, we'll talk about his win at Sedalia. What are you guys thinking? Let's move on and let's talk about the All-Star race that was at Utica Rome Speedway. Justin Peck, I got the hiccups. Justin Peck picked up his fifth All-Star win of the year and $10,000 at Utica Rome Speedway. What did you guys think of that race? Did you watch any of it, Kurt?
I did. That was an entertaining race.
That was a damn good race right there. Yeah, it was good. Yeah,
I mean there was a lot of action in that in that race on Saturday night. Too bad last night at Weedsport got rained out, but you know the action at Utica Rome
was a
terrific.
I was looking forward to some racing last night and really didn't get to watch much. There wasn't much on Flow that I wanted to watch last night, to be honest with you. Did you watch anything on Flow last night, Kurt?
I was at watching live.
Oh,
with
you
my own
you
two
were
eyes.
Live. Yeah.
But
hey, why didn't they film that last night down there at Lucas Oil Speedway? I mean, at Missouri State Fair.
Jimmy Miller was there and had his camera. And I talked to him before the race. They said with the logistics of the way that's all set up down there, they decided to just record the video and post it up there later. And I told him, I said, we've done live video out of Sedalia before.
Many times.
I think the fact that the judges stand is in the infield and getting audio up and where you got to shoot from
You've got to do, as we've done many times, is run a wireless from the infield up to your camera up in the grandstands.
We've done it before.
We've done it many times.
So you had to be there to watch it last night. I don't know where the video is that he shot last night.
Sounds
is that posted
like they
somewhere?
They just didn't want to have to do the extra work.
Where's that video posted, Austin?
Is there any video up there anywhere?
Oh, there it is right there. No, that's
Utica.
That's Utica, yeah.
Well, that's the first I heard of them having video up of the race.
Let's stay with Utica, though. All right, let's just stay with that. We don't need to step backwards and go back to the fair. We're already past that.
We've hashed that over.
We've already passed that. So Justin Peck picks up his fifth win of the year up there at Utica Rome. Was there anybody else that you thought was going to win that race at any point?
I thought Brent Marks was going to win it.
I did too. I really did. Did you watch any of that, Austin?
So I got a funny story of how I got to Utica Rome on Saturday night. So I was watching the races at Jackson, and they were running the non-wing races, and they had a hard wreck with an all-wing driver that, you know, he left in an ambulance. I haven't heard what's going on with him.
Right.
So I was kind of surfing around looking for things to watch, and I saw Bowman Gray was on, and that's another story in itself. I'll touch on it here in just a second, that we had a...
Was there a fight?
Yeah, there was a big fight. So two drivers, last lap for the championship, guy never lifts going into three and just... power plows the guy leader
for the championship.
I'm pretty sure it was for the championship, and that was a big incident. And the next race rolls out, they barrel roll a four-cylinder car in the back stretch.
Great.
That was an interesting
did the cage collapse?
No, he actually went to the hot pit, changed the left rear tire, ripped the left side of the body off,
and came back out. Oh god!
He only made a lap before it broke again.
Yeah.
That was definitely, if you're bored today, watch the last two features at Bowman Gray from Saturday night. You will be entertained. And then I came over and watched the Utica race, and I turned into the races, and there's a car stuck in the trees in turn 3 and 4. So for about, it was probably an hour's time span.
It took them forever to get that 01 car out of the woods, didn't
it? Yeah. So it was about an hour. I was from the time I started at Jackson, Bowman Gray, and here is about an hour long, and I saw very interesting incidents at each race. But yeah, I think, you know, going back to Utica, that the fastest cars were like Brent Marks and Sunshine. I mean, those two pretty much had it, you know, had it going. And then, you know,
and Peck just got it all together.
Yeah,
right
he
there
just
at the
never
end.
He never left the top.
Right.
He just stayed committed to it, knew what he had, and knew what he needed to do to pick up the win. And it just, you know, kind of fell his way for him. He got the traffic and was able to get by some cars and knew where he was fast at and never left it.
Chris Windham, that was probably one of his better runs of the year, wouldn't you say? He ran fourth last night. Started sixth, ran fourth, but it's starting to click for him. You can tell a little bit.
Yeah, I think they've had a handful of podiums this year, so
right.
They're having better runs. And they had a chassis manufacturer switch about a month or so ago, and ever since they switched to the same car that Justin Peck's running, RPM chassis, I feel like their runs have gotten better and the results have improved. And you know, I think it's just taking time. You know, that entire team, driver and crew, has been on the non-wing tour for so many years, and it's just they're going to tracks for the first time and having to start off at zero where guys already have a notebook, so
no experience.
You know,
right.
I think if he sticks with it next year, you'll see more of him, but. Yes, it's experience is starting to finally pay off for Chris Windham.
Yeah, Corey Eliason is doing pretty damn good in that 11 car, isn't he? He ended up
Corey Eliason's always done really well. Yeah, he just got robbed out of a really good ride. But yes, that's. I'm glad that you know he's been able to.
If you had your choice, would you pick Zeb or Corey to drive the 26 car? If it was your choice, if you were the owner of the 26, the Rudine car, who would you have in that car? Corey Eliason?
You know, that's a tough choice. I think they're both really talented.
Equally talented.
I just think that, right. You know, Corey's, you know, results were kind of
hit and miss a little bit.
No, he had good results. It was just, we've talked about it too much on here, but it just, he stuck with a bad crew chief, and it just really kind of, you know, soured his results and made him look like it was a driver issue, and it's not. So, you know, I think there's better opportunities out there for him, and I'm glad that he's showing that he still can get it done. And
where is Wayne Purdy right now? Do you know?
No, he's just working at Smith Titanium.
Wow, crazy.
Yeah, I'm always interested to see.
Zeb ended up running seventh,
right,
by the way.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm always interested to see the battle between Zeb Wise and Corey Eliason. Zeb Wise now in that 26th car ended up in seventh behind right. Corey Eliason, who ends up fifth.
Well, it's going to be a good week for the All-Star guys. They're going to run, what is it? It's on the 24th. They're going to be at Bloomsburg Fairgrounds.
Wednesday night.
And then at Bridgeport Speedway, then Williams Grove, then Lincoln, then Bedford, and then Sharon. So I can't wait. That's a two-day show at Sharon. So
yeah.
I guess the last race of the week would be at Bedford, right?
Right. Five straight nights of
Five straight nights on Wednesday night.
And
yeah. Then the next weekend, they're going to be at Sharon Speedway.
Yeah, over Labor Day weekend, yeah, right.
That'll be good.
So they got some big races coming up. The Tuscarora 50 at Port Royal's coming up here over the next week after Labor Day weekend. That pays a ton of money.
Pays $12,000 to win at Sharon Speedway on night number two. It pays $6,000 on night number one.
We're about to hit the month of money for Pennsylvania All-Star Racing, and it's about to get really good.
Yeah, so it's going to pay $6,000 to win at Bloomsburg, $12,000 to win at Bridgeport, and it's going to pay $4,000 to win at Williams Grove, and then it's going to pay $7,300 to win at Lincoln, $6,000 at Bedford, and then the two nights at Sharon Speedway the following weekend. The first night is going to pay $6,000. The second night is going to pay $6,000 as well.
And Tyler Courtney holds a 118-point
lead. Oh, I'm sorry. Second night, $12,000. Yeah. I'm sorry.
There we go.
Yeah.
Tyler Courtney with a 118-point lead over Justin Peck heading into this busy week beginning on Wednesday night.
Man, I'm giddy about this week. I can't wait, man.
Yep.
I am so excited about watching a week's worth of sprint car racing. Listen, I'm a huge fan of the All-Stars. And I'm a huge fan of the World of Outlaws. And for somebody that traveled with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour for 13 years, I'm giddy about the 410 racing that we've got going on right now. Between the All-Stars and the World of Outlaws, it doesn't get any better, does it?
Great, great racing, no doubt about it.
Yeah. What do you think, Austin? You pumped up about this week and the action that we're going to see this week?
I think this week will be good. I think we got a bigger, bigger races ahead of us, you know, with like the Tuscarora 50 and some of the big races we're going to have out in Pennsylvania during the month of September. And I think this is just kind of like a prelude to, you know, what's coming, you know, this or next. That's next week's next month. So, yeah, right. I think it's if you're a sprint car fan, this is the time to be one.
Hmm. Let's see here. Somebody was talking about Caleb says, Corey, depends on how much money Zeb was bringing. Hasn't Corey finished in front of Zeb every race since he lost the seat? Has he? Has he finished in front of him every race?
I'm pretty sure.
That's probably a pretty accurate statement there, Caleb. Always appreciate your thoughts there. The crew chief of the 26 car is Zeb's Wise best friend. Let me, Is that making him the best crew chief? I guess if they're good friends, that works, doesn't it? Right?
I'm not sure if the... I'm not sure who they have, you know. Because what I was told was, maybe this has changed since I've been told, but that it was someone that was already working for Rudin. But I'm not sure, you know, who Zeb brought with him when he left. I know, you know, Wayne didn't go, but if somebody, you know, he brought someone with him or what the deal was. But, yeah, I mean, that's all I can say about him.
Right. Caleb wants to know, anyone have any idea why Mercer Speedway only drew four 410s the other night? I didn't know that.
Four?
Only four.
Four 10s?
Only four. That would be embarrassing.
Boy, that's not good.
That's never good.
At least with 15, you can put on a show.
Right.
Four cars, that's hard to make a go of that.
Right, yeah. Tammy chimed in. She said Williams Grove is twin 20s paying $4,000 to win each. So there you go. All right, Tammy, appreciate your input as usual.
For you non-wing fans, Kokomo Speedway this weekend, it's the annual Sprint Car Smackdown. Be the Sprint Car Smackdown 11. Three big nights of USAC non-wing racing on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this weekend.
Hey, did you guys see that? How about Jonathan Davenport wins the topless 100?
Wow.
Led every lap.
That's the third straight 100-lap crown jewel that event. He started on the pole and led every lap. So he's led 300 consecutive laps of crown jewel feature racing over the last 3 weeks. And if you look back over his season, outside the million-dollar race, Jonathan Davenport has won 11 races of $20,000 to win or more. Six of those are $50,000 to win or more. His total winnings to date, at least, and I haven't added up to be accurate about this, but it's at least $1.6 million he's won in prize money this year in 2022.
That's nuts. Hey, I thought old Hudson O'Neill might run him down there a little bit there at the end of that race. What'd
yeah.
you think?
Yeah, it was kind of like the night before, which Batesville had a much better racetrack on Saturday night than Friday night. Friday
right.
night was junk, but Saturday night was pretty good racetrack. And
right.
Hudson O'Neill, it looked like maybe a repeat of last year. If you remember, Hudson O'Neill got past Jonathan Davenport on the last lap of last year's topless 100, and it looked like maybe it was coming down to that same scenario
yeah,
again,
no
but Davenport just had too much on this night, and that was his first ever topless 100 victory.
One of his crown jewel events that he'd yeah. been wanting to win for a long time. Yeah.
So, but it's just amazing. And this weekend, they're at Port Royal Speedway, and I haven't checked Jonathan's schedule to see if he's kind of an outlaw this year.
Right. Yeah.
But Port Royal Speedway this coming weekend is where they're going to be. I'm looking forward to that.
You know, I thought for a moment there Tim McCready might get up there and win that race.
Yeah.
Early in the race, I thought he might have a chance to win it.
Well, you remember when Tim McCready led the first 73 laps at the Silver Dollar Nationals
yep.
until Davenport got around
right,
him?
Right, right.
McCready really hasn't been at that level since then. That's mm-hmm. been about a month ago.
Yep.
But he did get a top five finish, finished fourth in that race, and this is Port Royal is kind of closer to his home area up there, so it'll be interesting to see how McCready and the 39 bunch get it done this weekend.
How about our boy Buddy Kofoit yesterday ran his first ARCA race at the Springfield Mile, and he got in a pretty bad crash there at the end of the race, didn't he? Austin?
He did. I just got to the track when I was scrolling through Twitter and saw that. Definitely was a scary situation to see how much those cars weighed. 3,500 pounds just kind of flying through.
3,450.
34, so yeah, 35 if you add a bunch of fuel to it or dirt, which mm-hmm. was already on the car. But
right, no doubt.
Yeah, it's never good when you got a car sitting on the front stretch, you know, in the cloud of dust and kind of in the shade of the grandstands. And just, he had nowhere to go. It's just, it was kind of an unfortunate situation with all the rain that, you know, the fairgrounds received. They had to cancel the Saturday nights, you know, Bettenhausen 100 with the Silver Crown cars. So they had to postpone practice and cancel qualifying. So they lined up the feature off of driver points, and put Jesse Love on the pole. But yeah, they didn't have a lot of time, I feel like, to, you know, really prep the track well. And I feel like if they could have been able to work on it maybe a day before, you know, if they had, you know, less rain or no rain at all, we wouldn't have had an issue with all the dust and drivers not being able to see. But when it was just that, all the rain and the track being so soft, you just can't get on it. And, you know, that's just a result.
They cut the laps on sometimes. That race, didn't they?
Yeah, after that, they canceled the race. So it was like lap 70, 75 of the race.
Did
when
they
that
say
happened.
Why?
They have a time limit there. I think it was, and the race got started later than normal. So I don't know what time the checkered flag flew. If
they have a time limit?
They said that on the broadcast, that and I watched the replay of the broadcast, that they were going to go green-white checker just before that wreck happened. And so that was getting down, and they called the race when Jesse Love got the checkered flag, or they gave him the checkered flag after that wreck happened.
And they give Buddy Kofoid second place, didn't
Third
they?
Third place.
I'm looking at the results right here. It says second place. Second place, Buddy Kofoid. Mobile One Toyota.
Second place. You're right about that.
Right.
They did give him second.
Right.
So that Ryan Unsicker in third. So, yeah, Kofoid didn't look like he had any it was kind of like the Casey Kane deal. He didn't have any time to react when that Bryce Hageman got side up against the fence there, and it was a little bit dusty there, and looked like Kofoid had no time to react.
Was Buddy close to Jesse Love there at the end of the race?
Yeah, he's battling with him for the lead.
Was he?
Because they came off a four, and Jesse was like a lane under where the car was parked, and Buddy was kind of trailing his quarter.
Did the car stall out? Was he just sitting there dead stop, or was he rolling still?
The car, what it looked like on the replays, you couldn't tell because of the dust and where the camera angle was. That was kind of an odd spot for those to catch a wreck there, but... it looked like he got on the wall and the car either, you know, stalled or stopped or broke. But, yes, he was just
barely moving.
No, he wasn't moving at all.
He was sitting
there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, unfortunately for Buddy, he didn't get hurt in that wreck. That's a good thing. So Jesse Love picks up the win at the Springfield Mile yesterday. All right. That was a heck of a wreck, though, for sure.
Yeah. Boy, what an initiation into the heavy stock cars on dirt for Buddy Kofoid.
Yeah. Let's, before we wrap up the show, give a little bit of a shout-out to Logan Foiler, who picked up the win at Billings up at Big Sky Speedway. It was his 12th win in the Frontier region up there. And Logan Foiler used to be a regular with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour, ran with us quite a bit back in the day. He's been more focused on the Frontier region since leaving the National Tour, and he picked up his 12th win up there in the Frontier region as well. Don Grable picks up the win on night number one of the Aztec Speedway race. I'm trying to figure out... I thought I had that one up there. On who won the second night at Aztec. But I didn't have that queued up here, Kirk. You got that?
I don't have that.
We didn't get the results from that?
Didn't get the results posted on that, so sorry about that.
Okay. Anyway, long story short is we are done for the day. We appreciate it. Brian Brown's going to join us tomorrow, talk about his big win down at Missouri State Fair at the fairgrounds. We're going to do it all over again. Yeah, Kurt.
Kyle Larson had a great weekend at Watkins Glen.
Okay.
You're not even going to mention that, are you?
I'm not worried about it. You know, Cup is not my thing. The problem with talking about Cup racing on here, Kirk, is when we talk about it, everybody leaves.
Well, it's the end of the show.
Nobody cares about Cup racing. Does anybody on here really give a hoot about Cup racing?
I do.
Well, you're only one person, Kurt.
I like it all. I like all the racing, man. Yeah,
but I'm just saying, for the most part, people want to talk sprint car racing late models on you.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's what we do. We like to talk late models and sprint cars right here on Mostly Motorsports. No. That's what Marie says. No. She doesn't like talking cup racing as well. I can always count on Marie to back me up. Just the road courses.
Is Kyle Larson,
I'd rather watch highlights, but I pay attention to it all.
Is Kyle Larson going to be at Port Royal Speedway this weekend?
Huh?
I would expect him to be at Port Royal Speedway with the late model this weekend.
I do.
Place that he's won.
Brad says I do. He watches cup racing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially
Hey, listen, I watched that race yesterday.
Especially that movie made on Chase Elliott there to win the race.
I totally watched that race yesterday. Yeah. And, you know, it is what it is. It's just road racing to me.
All right.
Yeah. I thought our boy C. Bell was going to get a little bit better finish yesterday, but he faded as the race went on. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. For Austin O'Neill, for my partner Kirk Elliott, Brian Brown joins us tomorrow on Mostly Motorsports. We hope that you'll tune in. Again, for Austin, for Kirk, I'm Scott saying see you later. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for sprint car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.